This week in KMA Land, Lane edges Feenstra and Field in Iowa GOP gubernatorial shocker. November showdown set for Iowa U.S. Senate seat. Dawson wins 4th District Democratic nomination. Clark, Stimson, and Anderson victorious in Page County Supervisors races. Fremont Mills and Montgomery County Supervisors races decided. And pool opens in Shenandoah but still closed in Red Oak. I'm Mike Peterson. The first time since 1968, voters in KMA Land went to the polls in Tuesday's Iowa primary to decide candidates for open seats for governor and the U.S. Senate. And the 2026 primary was historical in Iowa in terms of surprising results. The shocker of the night was in the race for the Iowa Republican gubernatorial nomination. Businessman Zach Lane edged Iowa Congressman Randy Feenstra and three other candidates to win the nomination. Unofficial results show Lane with 37.9% of the vote to Feenstra's 37%. Adam Steen finished third with 14%, Brand Sherman fourth with more than 7%, and Eddie Andrews fifth with about 3%. Speaking to his supporters Tuesday night, Lane says he upset the political establishment with a victory.
I don't have to tell you this, but nobody thought this could be done. We were outspent, opposed by the establishment, told to wait our turn. Well, tonight the people of Iowa had something to say about that we're not going to wait anymore.
Lane says one of his concerns as a candidate is stopping the exodus of young people from the state looking for opportunities elsewhere.
Wall Street hedge funds and foreign interests are buying and selling our land, driving up costs so our kids are priced out of the market. They treat Iowa land like it's a commodity instead of our inheritance. They treat us like numbers, not neighbors. This is over when I'm governor.
Feenstra lost despite a last-minute endorsement from President Trump. The whole Republican reflected on his faith in his concession speech.
The outcome wasn't what we probably wanted, but for me, I think for everybody in this room, God's got some awesome plans. And I was talking to my son about that. We got a new chapter, and I'm so looking forward to that new chapter in life. I've been in politics a long time, and you know what? God has now said, hey, Randy, we're into something else. It's exciting. So
Lane takes on State Auditor Rob Sand, who is unchallenged for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination in November's general election. A Tuesday's primary results also set the stage for a highly anticipated showdown for Iowa's open U.S. Senate seat. Congresswoman Ashley Hinson won the Republican nomination for the Senate seat over former State Senator Jim Carlin, while State Representative Josh Turek secured the Democratic nomination over State Senator Zach Walls. Both candidates now head to the November general election, seeking to succeed Republican Joni Ernst, who opted not to seek re-election. During a victory speech in front of supporters Tuesday evening, Hinson said she hopes to continue the federal government's efforts over the past 2 years.
We got to work. We started delivering that meaningful relief. We cut taxes on tips. We cut taxes on overtime. We cut taxes on Social Security for our seniors. We delivered relief for small businesses and family farms. We secured those borders. We took on the gangs and the cartels. We shut down drug and sex trafficking. And we sent criminal, illegal aliens back to where they came from. And we sent a message to the world that America's back.
Hinson received over 73% of the vote to Carlin's 25%. Hinson also highlighted her endorsement from President Trump for the Senate race.
No one has fought harder and persevered through more, sacrificed more, just to do the right thing for our country than our president has, right? Yep. Earning his support and endorsement in this race is not something that I take lightly. It is an honor and a responsibility that I will carry with me these next 5 months into November. So thank you, President Trump, for your service to our country.
On the Democratic side, Turek won 62% of the vote to Walls' 37%. Speaking before his supporters Tuesday night, Turek says Iowans are hurting right now under the Trump administration and that change is needed.
We're in a senseless Middle East war that is driving up gas prices here at home. Our rural communities are disappearing. Hospitals and schools are closing here. Our public schools are falling behind. Iowa's now nearly dead last for economic growth, personal income growth, OBGYNs, mental health providers. We have closed 250 more healthcare clinics than we've opened in the last 15 years. We have a cancer crisis, a water quality crisis. This is not the Iowa that I grew up in. This is not the state that we all love. But I am feeling hope here in Iowa for the first time in a very long time.
Turek previously highlighted his victory in a state legislative seat in the reddest district to be won by a Democrat in the 2024 general election. Turek says he hopes to bring a firsthand experience of the struggles facing Iowans to Washington, D.C.
People who have gone through real struggle, who know what it's like to not have enough, who know what a gallon of gas costs, who have had to put groceries on a credit card. We have enough millionaires in D.C. looking out for billionaires. We need real people in Washington who have felt the consequences of a broken system, because when you have gone through real struggle, you will have a different level of empathy and a different level of fight. And this is what we need in D.C., fighters for the people, and that is what I will be in the United States Senate.
Political pundits say the outcome of Iowa's Senate race could determine which party controls the U.S. Senate in 2027. Another race set for November is in the Iowa 4th Congressional District. Unofficial results indicate former State Representative Dave Dawson won the district's Democratic nomination with a little over 39%. Stephanie Snyder finished runner-up with 30.5%. Ashley Wolf Tornabane third with 30.4%. Dawson told KMA News he's honored and humbled to have received the voters' support for the Democratic nomination.
I've worked hard and had town halls in all 36 counties in Iowa's 4th Congressional District and met people face-to-face, and I am very honored to have received their vote tonight, and I'm excited to move on to the general election.
Dawson says his past legislative experience likely played a role in securing support for Democratic voters in Western Iowa.
I think my history of having a bipartisan record of accomplishments while I served in the Iowa State Legislature working to get results for my constituents, regardless of whether they were Democrat, Republican, or Independent, sets me apart from anybody else that's remaining in the race.
Dawson will square off with Republican nominee Chris McGowan in the November general election to succeed Congressman Randy Feenstra, who opted not to seek re-election and instead pursued a bid for governor in Iowa. McGowan was uncontested in Tuesday's Republican primary. Nominees are also set for Iowa's 3rd Congressional District this November. Incumbent Republican Congressman Zach Nunn was unopposed for the GOP nod, while Sarah Trone Garriott was the lone candidate seeking the Democratic nomination for the 3rd Congressional District. Two new faces will join three old ones on the expanded Page County Board of Supervisors come early next year. Incumbent Supervisors Chair Judy Clark and newcomers Seth Stimson and Mike Anderson won the Republican nominations in three contested supervisors races in Tuesday's Iowa primary. Unofficial results show Clark placing first from among three candidates in the 4th District Supervisors race with 708 votes. Dennis Boger placed second with 468 and Jamie Shore third with 297. An ecstatic Clark expressed her appreciation to the voters in an interview with KMA News.
I'm just really happy, pleased, and thank everybody for voting for me and placing their confidence in me again. So it's nice to be the winner tonight.
Clark joins incumbents Todd Maher and Brian Rogers, who are unchallenged in Districts 2 and 5 respectively, as the veterans on the five-member board. Stimson won the 3rd District Supervisor's GOP nomination over Blanchard Mayor Jeff Brownfield, 785 votes to 651. Stimson tells KMA News he was honored by the victory.
Oh, it's a big deal. It really is a big deal. It's an honor to be elected and still, you know, kind of some surreal feelings, to be honest with you. You know, one description is kind of an old face, but new face. I've grew up in this area and was elsewhere for 24 years, but came back and brought my family back to Page County in Southwest Iowa. And so just excited to be able to serve the people of Page County and to listen and learn and serve the people. I'm pretty excited tonight.
Tuesday's dinner was the 1st District Supervisor's race in which Michael Anderson won the Republican nomination over former Supervisor Alan Armstrong by 29 votes, 746 to 717. Anderson was asked what he'll do in the coming months to prepare for his supervisor's role.
Take more time to listen to the people that want to talk to you and tell you their concerns.
Barring unforeseen circumstances, all five victorious candidates will be unchallenged in the November general election, as no Democrats ran in any of the supervisors' districts. Two incumbent Fremont County supervisors held service in Tuesday's primary. Incumbents Clint Blackburn and Dustin Sheldon outlasted two other candidates for two spots of the Fremont County Board of Supervisors Republican ticket. An official result showed Blackburn as the top vote-getter with roughly 27% of the vote, while Sheldon finished second with just over 26%. Sterling Fichter and Chris Clark finished third and fourth, respectively. In an interview on election night in KMA land, Sheldon expressed his appreciation for the voters' support.
Well, I'm thankful for all the supporters that showed up and voted for us in this election, and we want to be able to continue doing, you know, the work that we're doing now, and I'm very thankful for all those supporters that turned out.
Well, with no Democratic candidates for the supervisor's race, Blackburn and Sheldon are expected to be uncontested in the November general election. Sheldon attributes their efforts to be more transparent with county residents as one reason for receiving the voters' support.
We've tried to be out front with everybody, you know, in the county on what we're trying to do, why we're trying to do what we're doing, as far as the decisions that we make, and progress, growth, you know, take care of the roads. And, you know, just try to keep moving forward progress, with, you know, especially with all the property tax regulations and stuff that we have to deal with every year.
Other hotly contested races came to a climax in Mills and Montgomery counties. In Mills County, David Farmer emerged victorious from a three-person race for a seat on the county board of supervisors in the GOP primary, picking up over 39% of the vote. Sandy Winton finished second with just over 33%, while Peter Beckner finished third with just under 27%. Farmer told KMA News he's appreciative of the voters' support, particularly with the higher turnout for a primary election.
I'm not sure how it measures up to the number of people that voted prior, but I heard it was substantially more than normal on an off-year election, and I really appreciate the residents getting out and participating in our constitutional republic. It's a good thing, I think. The county wins with all that interest.
In Montgomery County, Dwayne Adams won the Republican nomination for Supervisor District 4 over George Bruce. Adams secured nearly 60% of the vote, compared to 88 votes for Bruce, or roughly 39%. Adams told KMA News he appreciates the voters' support, saying he felt county residents could relate to him.
What really put me over the edge, I think, I can relate to a lot of these people. I know them. I've lived here. I got deep roots in the community. And I go through the everyday struggle just like they do.
Adams will face off with Jan Norris, the lone candidate seeking the District 4 Democratic nomination on the November ballot. There were two contested legislative races in KMA land Tuesday. Incumbent Devin Wood survived a primary challenge for the Iowa House's 17th District Republican nomination, defeating challenger Sean Kelly with over 80% of the vote. In an interview on election night in KMA land, Wood says she's grateful and honored to receive the voter support for a third time.
So grateful to the wonderful folks of House District 17, and I'm excited to get to November and then back to work in Des Moines for them, working at the Capitol and representing everybody in our wonderful district.
No Democratic candidate sought the nomination for Iowa House District 17, meaning Wood is expected to be unchallenged in the November general election. In the race for the Iowa House's 15th District Republican nomination, Jason Scheer was the top vote-getter with over 57%. Brian Jack Holder finished second and Tony Waite third, respectively. Benjamin Schauer was the lone candidate seeking the Democratic nomination for Iowa House District 15. Despite some interesting races, Page County election officials are expressing disappointment over voter turnout for Tuesday's Iowa primary. Page County Auditor Kristen Wagoner told KMA News 2,007 votes were cast in the 2026 primary, which translates into 20.09% of the county's registered voters. Wagner, however, says that's down from the average primary turnout of around 2,500 ballots cast, though absentee balloting totaled 416, which is more than the average of around 320. Wagner says she's not sure why turnout to the polls were less than expected.
You know, we've been having that conversation, and I don't know if it's just voter education. People just didn't realize that they were going to vote at the primary. I really don't know why it didn't come out as much, because I thought with the supervisor race and also with the governor race being on there that I thought we were going to have a much higher turnout.
Wagoner credits her poll workers and auditor's office staff with a relatively smooth primary election day.
Everything went very smooth. You know, our poll workers are just amazing, and we couldn't do these elections without them. They are wonderful, and they work together well, and anytime there was a problem, I mean, it wasn't necessarily a problem, it was just a question. They call us, and we help them, and they are just good people that help us here in Page County.
Page County's Board of Supervisors canvassed the votes from Tuesday's primary at its regular meeting next Tuesday. It was sink or swim in terms of KMA Land pools opening for the summer this week. Red Oaks Outdoor Aquatic Center remained closed because of a major leak. City Park Supervisor Adam Vandervliet told the Red Oaks City Council Monday evening the leak pushed the facility's opening past the original date of May 29th. Vandervliet says crews isolated the leak to the piping between the 0 and 3 foot levels of the pool.
We've kind of opened up three areas that we feel are concerns. We spent Friday looking at drone footage from Brian during the project to kind of locate the pipes, going over blueprints. We've been in conversation with JEO. We've been in conversation with Rikio Construction, his son Rory, and then ATCO out of Des Moines, who is our chemical supplier and pool supplier.
He adds crews from multiple departments have been working to address the issue. Even if the leak is found, City Administrator Lisa Cotter says it'll still be later this month before the pool can open because it takes multiple days to fill the pool and complete the necessary testing with the state before reopening to the public.
If we are able to determine where the leak is, then it is a matter of repairing those pipes and then, of course, putting the rock back. And then we'll have to pour concrete and let that cure for probably a week. So if we were to find it this week, we're probably another 10 days to 2 weeks out. So.
Councilman Levi Franks inquired who would be liable and cover the costs of any necessary repairs. Vandervliet says that depends on what ultimately caused the leak.
It kind of depends on what we find, you know, as far as if it's, you know, the earth moves, yes, you know, without getting pointing too many fingers right away at this point. I would say it's, you know, we'll just see what we uncover and see what we can find. And then I think after this all wraps up, we'll have a discussion with everybody as far as, you know, what caused this or what, you know, led to this.
After mechanical issues forced the city's original facility to close, the current $2.8 million aquatic center was constructed in 2020 and opened in 2021. Shenandoah swim season got off to a better start Wednesday. Another season for the Wilson Aquatic Center opened Wednesday afternoon. Through early August, the pool is open Sundays through Thursdays from noon to 6 p.m. and Fridays and Saturdays from noon to 7 p.m. Self-confessed pool rat Gabby Sparks returns, says the facility's manager. Sparks tells KMA News the 26th swim season begins without issues.
We didn't run into any problems setting up the pool. We were able to get in and get it nice and clean, and then started hiring guards and getting them certified. And so, honestly, this year kind of went really easy compared to previous years.
Sparks says the lack of mechanical issues bodes well for the pool this summer.
We don't have any leaks that any of us are aware of, and we're maintaining water levels, and our chlorine levels have been good. So, honestly, I think this is going to be a really good summer for us.
Though Shenandoah's pool is open, facilities in other communities aren't as lucky. Red Oaks Aquatic Center remains closed until at least later this month due to a major leak. Glenwood's facility is shut down for the second summer in a row due to continuing mechanical issues. And Sparks credits the city staff with keeping her pool operational.
We have a really great water department and wastewater department and all those guys from the city that have come down and help us get ready. And we can all rely on each other. If I send them a text saying I need help, they instantly come down to help. The city hall people are really good about helping me get what I need. And we're really fortunate to be open on time and to have the staff that we do have. And I feel for the other towns because we've been in that same boat and it is awful.
Shenandoah's pool was dormant in the summer of 2024 because of bunch-gated repairs. Admission is $5 per person. Children age 4 and under and residents 65 and older are free. Seasonal passes are $150 for immediate family and $60 for individuals. Contact the Wilson Aquatic Center or Shenandoah City Hall for more information. Plans for rejuvenating parts of the former Glenwood Resource Center campus are coming to fruition. Larry Winham is president of the Glenwood Redevelopment Corporation's Board of Directors. Winham tells KMA News site readiness activities are underway at the GRC site after more than 6 months of planning, environmental testing, and studies. After the former state-run facility closed in 2024, ownership of roughly 250 acres of the campus was officially transferred to the local redevelopment corporation in June of last year. Most recently, Winham says TerraCon was brought on to review each building on campus, develop an environmental report for each structure, and determine the extent of any hazardous materials, such as asbestos. While the initial work has moved slowly, Winham says the remediation biddings process is expected to begin later this month before the eventual demolition of the majority of the structures on campus, slated for later this fall.
Probably going to have about three different packages of abatement and probably another three packages of demolition. Obviously, the abatement has to be done first to get the buildings in a position to where they can then be demolished. So I think people are now going to start seeing a lot of activity up there, you know, a lot of trucks coming in and out of the site and disposing of those materials properly as required by regulations.
Though the state planned to remove all the buildings on campus, Winham says negotiations allowed the corporation to keep some of the structures. He says Arch Icon out of Woodbine, which restored several older structures in the Omaha area, was hired as the project's master developer.
At this point in time, we're thinking we're going to be able to save approximately 10 buildings up there that we think can be converted into multifamily housing, whether that's condominiums or apartments. So we're excited about the fact that we're not going to have to tear every building down, but by the same token, probably 85 to 90% of the structures up there are going to have to come down. But we did the best we could with the state to negotiate that. And I think people are going to, you know, hopefully over the long haul, be happy with what we've been able to preserve and how we're going to fit that into future housing development up there.
In addition to the 103 building, who houses the administrative offices for the Glenwood School District and Kids Place Daycare and the Glen Haven Nursing Home, Winham says other structures to be preserved include the Girls Cottage, Myers Building, the former GRC administrative offices, the Boys Cottage south of the Meyer Building, the old fire station, and the cantina located just west of the fire station. Motorists have also encountered road construction off U.S. Highway 34 to run two new roads up to the campus. Winham says it was a top priority to attract potential developers in the future. He notes that extensive work was also done by the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, which still owns a considerable amount of land around the campus.
There's probably about 900 acres on north of 34 and south of 34 that's DNR ground and owned by them. So we've had to work very closely with them in terms of developing these two roads and making sure that we don't disrupt any archaeological findings. So, again, we've worked closely with the State Historical Society and done a lot of additional work in that area to make sure we're not disturbing anything.
In addition to the remediation work and road construction, Winham says much of the focus right now with assistance from state funding is on getting a new utility spine run up to the campus, bringing the necessary water, sewer, gas, internet, and electric lines for future redevelopment.
That's kind of what the first phase of this is all about, and that's what most of the activity is going to be over the next 18 months or so. And then the next phase will be taking this, you know, we're continuing to work on the design, you know, some of this will be dependent upon where we can run that utility spine, and then be able to build some additional roadways off of the new two new roads that are going up there and start residential and maybe, you know, light retail commercial type development.
Winham says the Redevelopment Corporation, with assistance from HDR and Arch Icon, is still making tweaks to an updated design for what a residential and light commercial development could look like. More information about the project and the campus's history is available at glenwoodredevelopment.com. Again, that address, glenwoodredevelopment.com. And we do have a link with the web story at kmaland.com. And again, you can follow along with any further developments in the continuing fight to save the GRC campus. Now that wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. With the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land is a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for over 100 years.